everybody. Welcome to Skeleton Keys.
I'm Tori Yates Orr.
And I'm John Booker.
And together, we're going to try to unlock the mysteries of mythology and history in pop culture. And I'm just excited to examine the world. There's so much happening.
Isn't there, though? I mean, honestly, I feel like we could record this podcast every day of the week and have a completely different experience and something different to talk about every single day. But Tori, what's been going on with you? Have you watched anything recently that's been interesting to you? Have you heard any songs that have been interesting, read any books? What's been going on?
Well, honestly, for me, with spring right around the corner, Persephone has been popping up. I just keep seeing her or her name. She's been popping up a lot to me. And she's always been a figure that I kind of dismissed. And recently, I've been kind of really drawn to her. So Persephone, with the upcoming spring, has really been popping up for me.
I feel like Persephone is always somewhere nearby for me. I think you and I both, we've talked about Persephone a lot on, on this show, and that's because I think both of us connect somewhat to Persephone and her journey. And I've been fascinated with Persephone ever since the very first time that I heard about that myth. But what about Persephone draws you? What attracts you?
I think for me, it's, I think Persephone a lot of times is defined by her relationships, obviously to her mother and to Hades. But to me, her story is a story of a woman, of a girl becoming a woman and stepping into her own agency and owning her situation and owning the role that she needs to play. And I think it's, for me personally, it's always a reminder that, okay, these relationships have helped to shape you, but you decide who you are. You decide what you're going to do. So to me, it's a story of a woman, you know, stepping into her agency of, hey, yeah, I can be the queen of the underworld.
Yeah.
And also the bringer of spring and life.
As is often the case, you've brought up an archetype here that I've been seeing a lot in pop culture always, but I'm thinking about one specific example, and it's probably no secret on this podcast at all that I'm a huge Zoe Kravitz fan, and I went and saw The Batman, and of course she plays Catwoman. And I was thinking in watching Zoe Kravitz's performance of Catwoman, how this character in so many ways is an expression of Persephone that may be a very different expression of Persephone than we might otherwise think of. Have you seen The Batman?
I have. I was a very big fan of it.
Okay. So What comes up for you as I talk about Catwoman and Persephone?
I think for me, I think Catwoman and all of her iterations is trying to find her way, is trying to find her path. And in the film, I don't want to spoil it for people, we learn kind of about her background and where she came from and how she's had to make her way in the world despite conflicts with her relationships. And I definitely see a lot of that there. A woman, and it's also a woman who is deep in the underworld, but can also come out and bring the light and shine a light on it. There's a lot of Persephone, you know, archetypes within Catwoman.
Yeah, there really are. And, you know, this is certainly not a spoiler. Anyone who has followed Catwoman in the Batman mythos in the comics knows that this is not just Catwoman. This is a character, you know, known as Selina Kyle. And Selina Kyle is a pretty unique character in the Batverse, if you will. And it's a character that has been explored in a number of different ways. And I think about the expressions of Catwoman back to the old Batman TV show with Eartha Kitt, and then, you know, with Halle Berry. And it is often, if not mostly, been played by women of color. And I wonder if you, being a woman of color, what do you see as being, why is Selina Kyle so often interpreted as a woman of color?
I mean, I think it's like double consciousness. As women of color, we have to walk within the majority, the mainstream, but we also are recognizing I'm a Black woman or I'm a woman of color. There's no way to get around that. Yes, we are all one people, but my race and my gender are a part of me and are a part of my personality. So I do think that there is something that there to Selena being portrayed as a woman of color. I also think it's interesting that with Hallie and Zoe, they are both technically biracial. They come from biracial backgrounds. So literally coming from two different worlds and then bringing that to this character.
I'm also reminded of the role that cats play in Egyptian mythology, of course, where, you know, cats are expressed in a lot of different ways, but cats are treated as holy beings, as supernatural creatures that in some Egyptian myths can move between the world of the here and now and the world of the dead and the above world and the below world. And there certainly is something to this character of Selena Kyle that she exists in this liminal space. As you mentioned, there's the expression between races. I would even go so far to say, and tell me what you thought of this. Again, I don't think it's a spoiler because there's not an explicit discussion of this in the latest Batman film, but it seems to me that this expression of Selena Kyle exists even between binary sexualities. Did you pick up on a bisexuality in the fact that who she was living with might or might have not been a lover? She seems to exist between binaries in just about every possible way.
100%. That's what I picked up on. I think as soon as I heard her call this character, she would call them baby constantly. And it was just very affectionate. I definitely picked up that she has a bisexuality to her. And I don't know if Zoe Kravitz was intending on that, but that's what I picked up on. And I think too, there's a fluidity to Catwoman. There's a fluidity to Selena Kyle. There's a fluidity to cats where having even your sexual orientation be fluid is perfect for this character.
And that gender fluidity, of course, you know, it's a mythological idea on so many levels in that we have a number of different Hindu gods and goddesses that seem to be fluid in their gender expression. In the First Nations people of this country, there are a number of figures and characters that are fluid in their expression of sexuality and gender. Mythology as a whole, Greek and Roman mythology notwithstanding, is often the story of beings in that liminal space between heaven and earth that seem to transcend these binary ideas. There's even something about the name Selena Kyle in that it is a Selena being a name typically associated with women and Kyle being a name typically associated with men. There's something that even as an expression of this creature, this being, this individual exists between that binary of masculine and feminine.
100%. I also think just from another mythology standpoint is Selena coming from Selene, coming from the moon, coming from something we don't really know. It's everything is kind of linking back to this character that exists in the liminal. You don't really know. And we see that in every way with her and Batman. You don't really like grasp Selena Kyle. You don't own Selena Kyle. No one does. And so there's something about that, that she has the freedom and the beauty to exist outside of these binary thoughts, outside of these framing devices. And I think that's why she as a character has been so well loved throughout history, is because I think so many of us can see so many different aspects of ourselves within her.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really, you know, we spoke just a moment ago about the Egyptian mythology, you know, that the way that it dealt with cats. But the more that I think about it, you know, cats were sacred in so many different types of myths, even in our more, you know, standard Greek and Roman myths. I believe it was Herodotus that talked about whenever just a household cat died, entire families would mourn that cat. And there was even a ritual involved where they would shave their eyebrows in honor of that cat. And there's something there that the whole family comes around, that everyone in the family, you know, relates to. There's a universal nature there. There also is something about this particular expression of Selena Kyle and this Catwoman that, and maybe I'm projecting into this, so tell me, you know, what you think, but it seems to me that this Selena Kyle is harder to pin down in that she presents certain masculine qualities, but also there's this very clear feminine quality to her as well. And then there's sort of a, as you mentioned, like this gender fluid type quality, you know, to her character. However, there's a fierceness to her character that is immovable. There's something courageous, there's something fierce, and there's almost this warlike lioness quality, you know, to this expression of Catwoman, where we've seen, you know, in Eartha Kitt, in Halle Berry, often Catwoman gets put in the sexual box, right? They emphasize a sexuality. And it's not to say that this expression of Selena Kyle is not sexy, but it is not simply defined in terms of sexuality. There's something much broader going on. Do you have any sense of what that could be?
I don't know. And I think it's interesting you bringing up these attributes of her, because as you just said, cats have been, you know, loved for generations by people. And I think a big part, and I should be honest, I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person. So I understand the appeal, because there's something about cats. You have to earn their trust. You have to earn their love. You have to earn their affection. And they choose if they want to be with you. And so inherently there's a sense of they have their own agency. Yeah, I'll stop by and hang out at your house, but you don't own me. And so I think Selena, more so than like, oh, she's dressed like a cat, she has ears and long nails, that's just the surface of what makes her Catwoman. I think there's just so much depth there of, okay, I can be in my masculine if I need to, if I can be in this fluidity, I can be in my feminine. But she is, like you were saying, Hathor and Sekhmet, like two sides of the coin of like, yes, I can be very sweet and use my wiles to get what I need to do, but also I can be fierce and go for the neck. And that's where I think, and I especially love Zoe Kravitz, because that's a fine line to play. And I think she did a really great job with that.
Agreed. There's, you know, as you were talking about it, what rose up in me is this idea that, and again, this is not a spoiler because you see this in the poster and all the trailers, Zoe Kravitz's expression of Catwoman and Selena Kyle, it has the smallest mask I've ever seen on Catwoman. It just barely covers her eyes. In a sense, there's more embodiment of this Catwoman archetype, if you will, than we've ever seen before. The mask is very thin in many ways. What makes her Catwoman, what makes her Selena Kyle, is so much stronger. It's not hidden behind a mask. The mask in this expression of Catwoman simply accentuates the Catwoman archetype that she already embodies in so many ways.
Do you think, and this is not to diss Halle Berry's Catwoman.
Yeah, yeah.
That was definitely has its own
time. I love Halle Berry's Catwoman.
Hey, come on. But do you think a part of it too is like having to juxtapose the two of them? Is that Halle Berry's Catwoman was very much around the physicality, the appearance, and obviously these are two different directors, two different actors, two different times. But do you think that might have been why people might not have connected as well to her Catwoman, because it wasn't an embodiment, it was more of a performance?
Yeah, I definitely think you're spot on about that. Can I even be so bold as to suggest that this is not even a Halle Berry issue as much as this, in my estimation, at the time Halle Berry gave this Catwoman performance, there were still some really rigid ideas around Black women specifically sexuality and Black women specifically relationship to white men. And I think Halle Berry actually was doing a lot operating inside of the cultural box of expectation that white male culture had put on that character. Because let's be honest, until fairly recently, comic culture was a white male culture, right? And people of color and women that in non-binary individuals in that world definitely felt like outsiders for a long time. I mean, we're talking about the Batman mythology. You know, this is something that's been around a long time in comics. So I think I want to be careful to fully give Halle Berry her complete due, because this portrayal of Catwoman was incredible on so many levels. And again, just like Halle Berry did in cinema in so many other ways, she broke ground that makes Zoe Kravitz Catwoman and Selena Kyle even possible in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I actually really liked that film. I actually liked Halle Berry in it. Yeah. But I think Halle Berry, like you said, she broke so many doors open for people.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's important to remember she's the first Storm. She's Catwoman. Like, she's literally embodying these huge characters that we have so much love for. There's so much mythology placed on them. And that's hard to carry. And I think you're so right that at the time it was like, this is what a black woman who is going to be Catwoman needs to look like. This is what they need to do. And as much power as an actor has, they don't have complete control. And I think that's important for people to understand. Like, they are a person there to do a job. They don't have complete control over their character or how their character is presented or the editing or any of that. And I think she did a great job for what was given to her.
Absolutely.
And I think we would never have, like you said, we would never have been allowed or able to see a fully fleshed and embodied what we think is a bisexual black Catwoman in the Batman if Halle Berry had not opened that door.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I think one Catwoman that we have not brought up and talked about, and it's a Catwoman that predated Halle Berry's Catwoman by about 10 years, was Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman. And when you juxtapose Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman versus Halle Berry's Catwoman, there are some similarities and then there's some stark differences. There's still a similarity that there's a sexualization of this character that is clearly not there for Batman. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's plenty of men and women that sexualize Batman. But as far as how Batman has always been presented, with the exception of the bat costume with the nipples, that was a bridge too far for a lot of people of like, I don't know if we need bat nipples on that
We always
costume.
Remember the bat nipples.
Right, right. You know, for the most part, Batman is presented with sort of a, often is asexual, that sexuality is not his primary focus. It doesn't seem to be a great weakness for him often in the Batman mythology. But when we see the presentation of Catwoman, whether it's Eartha Kitt or Michelle Pfeiffer or Halle Berry, it often is presented as this very, very sexualized character. The other thing I think about Halle Berry's Batwoman as opposed to Michelle Pfeiffer's Batwoman is, and here I'm going for the deep cut, and this is a podcast and people don't have pictures up in front of them, but Michelle Pfeiffer's Batwoman costume covered way more of her flesh and skin than Halle Berry's did. Halle Berry's Batwoman costume left room for a lot of cleavage.
And abs.
And abs, and like there was a lot of exposure of the body, you know, the sexual body in that. And the other thing that I don't know if you recall this being part of the discussion around Halle Berry's bat costume, the Catwoman costume, was there was a certain element of it that felt, well, I don't know of a better way to say it, like it was a bit dominatrix. Centered. There was sort of a S&M BDS element, the whip and just the costume itself. And I would also say at that time when that particular expression of Catwoman came out, that was a big thing in the culture at the time. Popular culture was exploring BDSM and was exploring S&M on a pop culture level quite a bit. So as we talk about it, it starts to make me think that perhaps Catwoman has often been a mirror for pop culture's ideas about the expanses of especially feminized sexuality, whether it be Halle Berry in sort of this S&M BDSM costume, but now we have Zoe Kravitz in sort of this sexually expansive, bisexual, gender fluid, the mask being very, very, you know, small, that it is now mirroring where we're at right now with feminized sexuality in many ways. Does that resonate with you? What does that bring up for you?
I mean, that completely does. And I think it's what you were saying about Batman is so true, and that he's kind of presented as an asexual figure. And so in that way, you can't really project how is sexuality moving through Batman. We can't really tell other than the nipples, like we talked about. But I think it's interesting that you see Michelle Pfeiffer, Halle Berry, Zoe Kravitz, and how they are avatars for what feminine sexuality can become. And you even see that with Eartha Kitt and like Julie Newmar. You see that at every step of the way of even ideals of what is beautiful or what is acceptable for a woman to do are projected onto Catwoman. So it's almost a sense of, well, that's my Catwoman because that's the Catwoman I grew up with. Or like when Spider-Man was out, everyone was saying, that's my Spider-Man or that's the Spider-Man I grew up with. And that Spider-Man reflects the world around us. And so I think Catwoman is this figure where we can look at where feminine sexuality exists. And I think you're completely right on that.
So good. And I'm really glad you brought in Julie Newmar, who we had not brought in to the conversation previously. When you look at, now granted, you know, Eartha Kitt, Julie Newmar, these actresses that portrayed, you know, Catwoman in previous iterations, you know, of culture that were much more conservative, you still look at the expression of Catwoman in the form of Julie Newmar, and it's sort of like these cute little ears. It's almost like a cute thing, you know. At least there's a sweetness to it. Now, granted, I wasn't alive back in the 1960s when she, you know, starred in the Batman stories as Catwoman. But looking back now, at least I look upon her as having this sweetness. Now, maybe they saw that as a sexuality different than what I'm viewing it looking back. But it seems to me that, and I may be going a bridge too far here, there seems to be a sexuality especially assigned to the women of color that have played Catwoman more so than Michelle Pfeiffer and Julie Newmar. Now, Michelle Pfeiffer, There's certainly a sexuality going on there, but I am struck at how much of her costume covered her body that we did not see with these women of color that played Catwoman. And again, I think it's not only, or perhaps I would theorize, it's not only an expression of feminized sexuality, but it's also an expression often of women of color's sexual perceptions around women of color's sexualized presence in pop culture.
100%. I think throughout history, women of color have always been over-sexualized at every step of the way. And we still see that. And so you're seeing that with Catwoman. I think this most modern iteration is the one where we don't see as much of that projection, and it seems more that it's her agency. But I agree, because I always think about like Julie Newmar and then Eartha Kitt, and Eartha Kitt was more obviously like portrayed as a more like sexy character than the sweet little Julie Newmar. And I think even Michelle Pfeiffer's interpretation, while it's seen as very sexy, kind of comes off like, but she's a little loose, you know, she's a little like unstable, and that's why she's doing this. And then with the women of color that have played it, it's like, oh, well, they're just sexy. Yeah. That's just what they do.
Yeah.
And that limits how people can see you. And I think it can be very limiting.
I'm so glad you're bringing this into the conversation. You know, Tori, you're a historian. Any insights into the sexualization of Black women, like when that started, how that developed, how that's progressed. Any thoughts about that?
I mean, I think I can speak to like American history is the slave trade. Black women have always been over-sexualized. And it was always the mindset of I can use them for sex. Our bodies were more curvaceous. So that meant that we were supposed to be like sexual deviants. You hear stories of Sarah Bartman, who was put on display because her rear end was bigger than anyone else had seen. And she was paraded around like she was a sideshow figure. So we see that throughout history, or you see it, you know, like terms, you know, about Black women and white men that have carried over from slavery. And so, I have this in my family, like my great grandfather is the product of a rape of an enslaved woman and a slave owner. And I think that's a part of it too, is that the sexualization of the Black woman started from the sexual assault mm-hmm. of Black women. Like wow. This idea that this over-sexualized woman came from men assaulting them.
Wow.
And I think that's important to understand. Like this is not an inherent, like Black women are just sexier. It's this portrayal that men, white men, put on them. Mm. Or even white women at the time of, well, my husband had sex with them, but she attacked him, or she's oversexed. And that's why he went after that woman. And so I think it's a long, long history of not just Black women, of fetishizing and exoticizing women of color at every step of the way and not seeing them as full-bodied human beings.
You know, you use that word fetishizing, and I think that's really spot on. In there's a certain element to Catwoman that is a fetishized archetype in some ways. And I think really that Halle Berry Catwoman, again, with that connection to fetishes like BDSM, there's a connection there for sure. I think where this becomes such an important topic of conversation is there's so many intersecting ideas here, and the spaghetti can be hard to pull apart because we have this idea of the over-sexualization of Black women in this character. I also know I've been to Comic-Con before and seen young Black women dressed as Catwoman, not necessarily in, you know, sexy Catwoman outfits, but that were so thrilled to have someone in the comic universe that they felt like they could embody and that they could play a role in. They love the Batman mythology and were so thrilled to have a place in that mythology. How, you know, do we just hold both of those things as being complex ideas we have to hold at the same time? Or how do you think about those things?
I don't know how you think about this, but I think we have to. We have to hold, I mean, especially as someone who is in history, we have to hold where these things came from while allowing ourselves to have the freedom to be as sexy as we want to be. And I don't care if you think, oh, you're a Black woman. I don't give a damn. I'm going to be fine as hell and you're going to deal with it. And so I think you're 100% right in that, especially in the comic world, there's not many characters that are given a sense of agency or sense of ownership that are Black women. I think that's why Black women love Storm so much, or at least that's why I love Storm so much. And so I completely agree that there is an attraction to Catwoman. I never felt like I could pull her off, but I might try for Halloween this year. But I do. I think we have to hold both. And I think that's hard for people to do. And that's hard for society to do. And we're struggling with that in so many ways now. But I have to force myself to hold both. Sometimes one weighs out more than the other, but that's life. But I also think it's important to the history of the sexualization of Black women and how Black women define themselves.
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
Wow. I could listen to you talk about that literally all day long. Tori, this show is called Skeleton Keys, and we often give a skeleton from our closet as well as a key. I'm going to give a twofer here. Yeah, that I'm going to give my skeleton and my key back to back here, just because we're mixing it up today. We're getting crazy on skeleton keys. So I could tell a number of stories about cats that the Booker family owned. We were a cat family. We had a few dogs, but we had a number of cats. And there were three boys in my family, myself and my two younger brothers. And I'm embarrassed to tell you how we terrorized these poor cats that we had in the family. And my skeleton in my closet is I often used to take one of these small Siamese cats that we had and that I knew had sharp claws, and I would throw the cat at one of my younger brothers to so that the cat, you know, his claws would grab on to them. So I never hurt the cat, but I would use the cat as a weapon, and I'm embarrassed about it. I've repented of this, and I am ashamed to talk about it, but
how
I feel
close
like,
were you to your brother when you were throwing a cat as a missile at him?
Probably, you know, 3 or 4 feet, you know, away. So yeah, it's not something I'm proud of. It is not something I'm proud of, but that is a skeleton from my cat closet, if you will, Tori.
Well, an effective way of using a cat, honestly. You were just thinking outside the box.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the key I want to offer people is I love to be active on Twitter, and we'll talk about later in the episode here where you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and the different social media sites. But the Twitter account Black Girl Nerds is just one of my faves. I love Black Girl Nerds. It is an amazing, wonderful account that and I'll probably mispronounce her name, but it's Jamie Broadnax, I think is the way that she pronounces it.
I think that's accurate, yeah.
Yeah, and she is just one of the most insightful human beings on every particular subject. But I also learn so much about the way that or different ways of looking at characters that I have grown up with and have known in the comic space for years. And so, you know, Jamie doesn't know it, but she's a mentor for me.
You'll have to let her know.
Yeah, in the world of comic space, she's just incredible. So if you don't already follow Black Girl Nerds, please go follow Black Girl Nerds. It's just an incredible, incredible Twitter account to follow. So there's my skeleton and my key all wrapped up in one fun little package for you. Tori, no pressure, but do you have any skeletons or keys you'd like to share today?
I wasn't throwing cats.
Okay.
So I will apologize. I don't have that one as a skeleton in my closet. But we were speaking about Hallie and Black Girl Nerds, and I have been a Black Girl Nerd since birth. It probably came out that my mom was like, that's a nerd. And I loved Halle Berry's Storm, but my Storm was like the TV show X-Men.
Oh, yes.
If anybody remembers it, it's a classic, one of the greatest theme songs of all time. Anyway, I obviously had to go with Storm for Halloween, but I had a big old white curly wig that wouldn't stay up. So it there's pictures of me, and you just see kind of my nose. And I have my hands up like I'm Storm, and I'm controlling the weather, and I can't see a damn thing.
Amazing.
I'm pretty sure my mom got me like an adult person's like white curly wig because she's awesome. But yeah, that's not – I tried. My interpretation wasn't great. I'm sure there is photographic evidence, and I'm going to try and burn it before anybody sees it.
I love it.
My key is another comic book, would be The Wicked and the Divine.
Ooh, so good.
And Sekhmet, yes, from there, yes, is another Catwoman-esque, yes, interpretation. So if you want another interpretation where she looks like Rihanna, that's one of them. I would go with that one, The Wicked and the Divine.
Oh, such a great, great book, The Wicked and the Divine. I'm so glad you brought that in. Amazing. Well, the last thing that we often talk about on this show is sort of the psychological implications of a particular archetype or myth or you know, person from history in the larger culture. And I wonder, you know, what, when you saw that Zoe Kravitz was going to be portraying, you know, Catwoman, what, even before you saw the film, what were you hoping she would bring to that, that the culture would witness and that the culture would experience through Zoe Kravitz's expression of Catwoman?
I think for myself, obviously Zoe Kravitz is gorgeous beyond words. I mean, stunning. But I think what's I really find interesting about her, and I think a lot of us, we knew her from her acting, but I think we know her as her persona. And her persona is a little bit mysterious, but it seems like she has such a deep self-possession within her of she knows exactly who she is and she knows what she brings to the table. And I think you see that throughout her roles. There's always a sense of kind of a stillness of like, I know who I am. I'm going to kind of bring that to it. But there's like an underlying fire there as well. And that's what I was hoping she would bring to the role. And I definitely think she did.
Oh, she did.
You think about her as Zoe?
I grew up playing with action figures. I grew up playing with, you know, Star Wars figures and G.I. Joes and, you know, all these different action figures. And when I saw that Zoe Kravitz was going to be, you know, portraying Selena Kyle, one of the first thoughts I had is, oh, how cool that little boys growing up today are going to get this amazing Selena Kyle action figure. And in the stories they create, in the worlds that they imagine, Zoe Kravitz's Selena Kyle is going to be part of that storytelling and part of those worlds. And that makes me so happy to imagine a future constructed by young men and women and non-binary people that have imagined worlds where the superheroes look like Zoe Kravitz and act like Zoe Kravitz and embody this Selena Kyle Catwoman archetype. That just makes me so happy and excited to think about. And I want to live in that world. We will live in that world.
I want to live in that world too. I want to go back get some action figures now. I'm like, I wish I had Selena Kyle as a kid. That would have been amazing.
Right. I probably, truth be told, I probably will still go buy the Selena Kyle action figure, even though I'm a grown man. I need it. I got to have it.
Honestly, I really just love them.
Right.
Batman, the Bat and the Cat. I love this iteration. I really do.
Me too. Tori, where can people find us if they want to, you know, share their own Catwoman stories with us?
Please share your stories about Catwoman, about throwing cats, about bad Halloween costumes, about everything. You can always shoot us an email at skeletonkeyspodcast@gmail.com or follow us on our socials at skeletonkeyspod on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow us individually. I'm at Tori Yates Orr on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm at John K B U C H E R on Twitter and Telling a Better Story on Instagram. Tori, we never know what we're going to unearth on this podcast, but I can't say that there's anything else I would have rather talked about today than Catwoman. I'm so glad we got to this today.
I'm so happy we did, and I'm not going to lie to you, I kind of have the urge to meow.
You've been listening to the Skeleton Keys podcast with Tori Yates Orr and John Booker. A podcast that unlocks the mysteries of mythology and history in pop culture. Contact us at skeletonkeyspodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @skeletonkeyspod. Skeleton Keys is a production of Sideshow Media Group.